It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland also gets to sit in on this session with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi, Daniel.
Mark.
Hey, this week, I'm going to get some help for my marriage, I hear.
Yeah? Sound Mind, that's the name of the show, and if you're married, and so we know that, you know, a big step toward the sound mind is having a sound marriage.
There you go.
Yeah.
You have an interesting you're kind of your own buzzwords on this. You want to talk and flesh out what you mean by the purpose and the process of marriage this week.
Yeah, you know, there's been so much attention in the past, say, few years, and probably in the last couple of years, and I think that the Supreme Court had this thing. I haven't heard the outcome of that, but having to do with gay marriage and just what role that's going to play. And, you know, you see the Christian community even waffling on this and, you know, kind of the elephant question in the room is what difference does it make? You know, what difference does it make to you what I do? And so I don't know that we'll get deep into that, but I would start off the program just by saying this, that the thing that makes us human is how we behave one toward another. That's what makes us human. We can be Homo sapiens and not be fully human. Mm. Fully human is how we treat one another. And so relationships that are dysfunctional, that is, they don't bring out the humanness in one another. And we'll talk a little bit more about the process of how that happens and why homosexual relationships simply don't work. And I know I'm offending a lot of people, but you know, I just don't want to waffle on this. And this is not a show about homosexuality and homosexual marriage.
You just kind of wanted to get that out of the way.
Yeah, and the fact that they're actually, you know, we're going to assume that there is a purpose of marriage. Let me start off with that, but kind of, I'm sure that if we take a secular approach to marriage, just a historical review of the institution of marriage, how it started, how it evolved, which I've done, you can just imagine back in the cave days, they didn't exchange rings or do that, you know, and you may think, well, what really was marriage? Well, you know, you know, we kind of have the image of the guy clubbing the gal over the head with a piece of wood and dragging her off, you know. Right. So that was kind of the marriage ceremony or something like that. You know, it was about having children. Why would you have children? Well, partly because it's, you know, sex is pleasant. That's why you would wind up having children. The other part is, though, that people could have been intentional about it, say, the more people you have in your family, the more secure you are from other families. And then families became tribes and clans. And then you can just kind of see civilization beginning to happen. And as civilization happens, the marriage role begins to evolve, you know, and the protection of that relationship, even in throughout history, if we go back 2,000 years, and beyond, the role, when we talk about monogamy, you'd say, well, it didn't have the same meaning then as it does today, post-Civil War, actually, where monogamy means there's one guy and one gal in the house. But before that time, monogamy always meant one gal and one guy, but the gal wasn't necessarily the only gal in the house. She was the matriarch. She was in charge of the house. The money went through her first. If the husband were to die, her children, that's where the money went. There could have been mistresses, and in, you know, days earlier, could concubine, slave. But monogamy, although that was always been the human default for that relationship, it was also one that's been protected, because that's what was good for society and civilization, having that accountability. Who's in charge of the kids? Those two people. And so on. A good book to read, pass this on to people if you want to get a good education on how that secular view has always been and how it is now. The name of the book is What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. And it's written by a man named Sharif, another man Garris, and a man Anderson. Sharif and Garris and Anderson. What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. And it's very practical look at what marriage has meant, what it means in the secular realm, and then what it means in, or at least the practical side, what its purpose is here. But I want to go a little bit beyond that, because we can, regardless of how we look at that, we can say, even as a Christian, there are certain things in that book, and even in the secular view, there are things as a Christian that I agree with in the secular view. You know, the secular secular person, even a person that is in favor of homosexual marriage might say, well, marriage is about you're sharing your life with this other person, and it's mutual. And so this is the person that you want to share your life and what you have and who you are and everything with this person. That part we agree with, but it doesn't go on to define how big that marriage should be, how many people should be involved in it. And the other thing is that it doesn't suggest or embrace an idea that there is an objective purpose of marriage, an ontological purpose of marriage that was in the mind of God and the character of God before we even got here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I want to go.
Well, even the secular view understands the importance of a family to mm-hmm. the foundation of a society,
right.
I think. You know, so you want to take us to the next step, which is obviously is the biblical view.
I hope so. This is the view that makes the sense to me out of Scripture. The other views can have merit, but they're humanistic. I mean, they start and end in with humans as their authors and the beneficiaries. But I think a true biblical view has God also as the beneficiary and as the author. So there's a lot of confusion even in the Christian community. I think about when we talk about the purpose of marriage, the confusion I think largely comes from the fact that we're not really sure if what we mean by that, or if there is a purpose, an ontological purpose, which is probably a new idea for a lot of Christians even. But I'm thinking of three responses that you might get if you asked 100 people on the street, 100 Christians on the street, what's the purpose of marriage? A lot would refer to it's an image of Christ in the church.
Right.
They would say it's a picture. Now, that doesn't talk about its purpose. So I used in an article that I wrote at ChristianCounselorsForum.com, which is the current article now, Purpose of Marriage, ChristianCounselorsForum.com. I say, when someone asks me, what are you going to use your truck for, my response is not, it's a Ford.
Right.
So when someone says, what is the purpose of marriage, to say it's a picture of Christ in the church is not an answer to the question, what is its purpose?
Right.
So we want to get to the purpose. Another one is people will say, well, you know, mankind to take care of the earth. But we're not asking the question, what was the purpose of mankind? What was the purpose of marriage? What's the purpose of the relationship between Adam and Eve and how they were married? And then another one that's probably typical is, well, to bring forth fruit, to bear fruit. And that kind of gets back to the secular view, too. But in Genesis, God also commanded the animals to be fruitful and multiply.
Right.
And so that be fruitful and multiply is not unique to human beings. And so that's apart from our purpose. So you want to jump right into Genesis 1. I won't read it, but in the first chapter of Genesis, of course, is that very familiar passage where God says, let us make man in our image. And then it goes on, it says, in the image of man made he him. Male and female made he them, he called their name Adam, referred to him as Adam. Well, so the first thing that people may be aware of is that the word Adam in that text does not refer to a man. It just refers to human. There's no gender implied. And neither is there gender implied when the Bible says, and he made him. There's no gender implied. There's not gender implied until the name Eve is used in that first passage. So it's God is saying, let us make the human in our image. And in the image of God made he it, male and female. So the human in that first, the suggestion is, in that first chapter of Genesis, that the human was Adam and Eve together, the male and female together. Interesting that God says, let us make man, singular, in our, plural, image, singular. So he's got singular man, singular image, but there's a plurality in it. And then when he creates man, he creates him plural, just like God. And, you know, you've probably heard that the image of God meant body, soul, and spirit.
I've always thought, though, it maybe meant more Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Mm. It was a mention of the Trinity right there in the first mm-hmm. book of the Bible, but that's up to debate.
Yeah, and I wouldn't argue that that's not true, but I would argue that that doesn't seem to be the direction Moses is going in writing that. We've sort of retrofitted the Trinity into that from later on, but what that passage is definitely about is that God is plural.
Yes.
That God is plural, and that what, and so I, the way I put that in my vernacular is God is eminently, intimately relational. He's eminently, intimately relational. And he created man eminently, intimately relational. So that's what it means to be human, to be eminently, intimately relational. And so, as we were saying earlier, the way we behave toward one another is what makes us human. And so I believe that that's why God created us that way, for relationship, for imminent, intimate relationship. We go to the second chapter because I want to try to prove out my idea on the first chapter. And in the second chapter of Genesis, we have a different account of the creation of man.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got, I don't know if there was ever a suspicion that two different people wrote that, but I think that that it's pretty much the general consensus is Moses is the author of all of that.
Yeah.
So it's almost as though he either forgot that he had written the story one way and a little bit later wrote it differently, or he's really trying to drive a point home, and I think that that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up earlier that some people view Genesis as an analogy, or these parts as an analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it really matters.
Whether there was a literal Adam and Eve or not.
Yeah, I don't think, with regard to what we're talking about right here,
mm-hmm.
I think a person that just thought of it as just an analogy, this would be every bit as powerful because it's Moses saying, driving the point home. And then for people who, which is probably most of the Christian community, I would think, that believe that there was an actual Adam. Because I seem to recall Jesus talking about Adam in the scripture in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's so, and if he didn't put it in terms of a parable or a mythology.
Well, regardless, I mean, what's cool about it is, yeah, a real Adam and Eve, but also an implication, a bigger story
mm-hmm.
that comes from this creation mm-hmm. account, this Genesis 1 and 2. So.
Yeah. So in the second one, we have God with Adam, and it says that he created the man. And that's pretty clear in the second chapter that the man, Adam, the male, is created before Eve. But it doesn't say he was created in God's image. As a matter of fact, a little later on, God's looking at the man and says, that's not good. Now, you know, I hope I'm not reading too much into what Moses says here, but when God uses the word good, he must always be referring to himself, because there couldn't be something outside of God that he has to defer to. So when God uses the word good, he's talking about himself. And when he says, it's not good for man to live alone, what I read into that is God actually saying, that's not my image.
Hmm.
So we have him, then he's with Adam, and he's saying that Adam has named all the animals, and that there's not a helpmeet found for Adam, which was a bit of a surprise for us, maybe. Would God not have thought that through? Because the chapter goes on to tell us how important that helpmeet is going to be. And so here again, I think Moses is driving a point home that Adam is not complete without this helper. And by the way, it's not just somebody that, you know, that dry the dishes if Adam washes. The helper was the other part of a dynamic that we're going to talk about when we get to process, an essential dynamic that makes us human. And so we've got them kind of going through the woods looking for the helpmeet, and then finally what has to happen is Adam goes into a deep sleep. And I personally believe that that was death. The reason I believe that is because it fits the narrative of the God who created from himself, and the Christ who died for sins and gave his life for the church, and then there's Adam. I think that what Moses is talking about here is the man dying and the woman being taken out of his body. Again, just driving that point home, that was one human, not two, but one. So we'll get into it when we come back from the break. I think we're ready.
Interesting discussion. The purpose and process of marriage today with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Now, you mentioned briefly in there this website where you've actually written some of these ideas down. What is that website again?
ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And the current article there is The Purpose of Marriage.
And more details as well on his website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Correct.
And you have offices in both Edmonds and Bellevue, and a phone number if people want to get some of your interesting perspectives on marriage.
Yeah, that would be 425-778-6169.
Coming back with more of Sound Mind, how to have a sound marriage today on the program here on KCIS.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland joining Daniel for this very interesting discussion today on Sound Mind, the purpose and process of marriage. As usual, Daniel, you always you have a whole different way of thinking about some of these things. And I'm really enjoying this, your kind of take on Genesis 1 and the very different story of the beginnings of Adam and Eve in Genesis 2. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how the big time when Adam took the rib out of, or God took the rib out of Adam and created Eve, and that was it was very profound. And why don't you continue to explain that?
You know, we've heard that story and always just kind of imagine Adam dozing off, and maybe he's got a handful of grapes or bananas or something.
Right.
And when he wakes up, there's Eve. But as an adult and as a marriage counselor, and understanding something that I've said to couples many times, and is that death is or marriage is a death experience.
Hmm.
That is, it's a continual laying down of your life. And so it just made sense to me one time when I was reading that and kind of had an idea that what if that were an actual, what if Moses is talking about an actual death? Whether we read it as an allegory or whether we read it as actual fact, what if Moses is talking about an actual death? And that just made perfect sense to me. It fit the narrative of Christ giving his life for the church. The command to the man in, I think it's Colossians, where Paul says that the man, you know, love your wife as like Christ loved the church. I had a situation one time. Yeah, it's kind of like apropos of a number of situations you might run into in marriage counseling, where the man says to me, "Well, what if I lay down my life for my wife and she walks all over me?" And of course, the answer is she might do that.
Yeah.
You don't have any rights at that point, and so you should be careful who you marry, because you when you lay down your life, you then don't have any rights. Anyway, that's Moses, or what Moses is writing here is that I think that Adam completely had to lay down his life. Well, that's the analogy or the allegory. Obviously, Adam didn't feel that way about it, as we see when they fell, and he was like protecting himself first. So the thing that I wanted to focus on in this last part, more on the process more on the process, but maybe just to recap, that the purpose we're looking at is if I'm understanding Moses correctly, then the purpose of marriage is to make it is to keep us human. God created man imminently, intimately, relational, in such a way that there was a dynamic created between Adam and Eve that would keep them human, which we're going to talk about in process, but. Before we do that, we could ask the question, well, why would it be so important for man to be human in the sense that we're talking about it? You know, why would God have to create man, as you say, and have this dynamic to keep man human? Well, I think that has to do with the salvation of man, and mm-hmm. the fact that God intended man for intimate relationship. But how can we relate intimately with God, because he's up there and we're down here? There had to be a context. There had to be a rendezvous point, let's call it, between God and man. And so that rendezvous point between God and man is called humanness, our humanness. That's where we comprehend God. It's because of our humanness that we comprehend God. It's because of our humanness that we can't, you know, have relationship with, or even aspire toward relationship with God. But God has to condescend to that rendezvous point. And of course, he did that in Christ Jesus, the incarnate God. He comes to the point of humanness. But we have to be there too. If we're not there, we can't fully comprehend what salvation is about. Mm. And I think that that's kind of been the problem, one of the problems in the Christian community forever, is not really fully comprehending the sacrifice of Christ and what it means to be, what the salvation process is. And I think a lot of that has to do with that and our not being at that rendezvous point. And for me, that reflects right back on the situation that marriage finds itself in, with a 50% divorce rate. Mm. And the nation, indeed the world, asking, does marriage have to be a man and a woman? There are places in the world where you can get a marriage certificate that allows for several people to get married mm-hmm. for a weekend or something like that, right. and then it expires. If marriage is just this secular view of it's what's good for me and what's good for another person, and there's no suggestion that what about an objective ontological purpose of marriage that is designed to bring us to God, and so that's kind of where we're headed here. So God created Adam and Eve. We created a dynamic between them, I think, that probably in some way has to exist in the Godhead, where they're eminently, intimately relational. This relationship between man and woman, when people come for marriage, they want to resolve issues and things. And a lot of the times, the things that they're trying to resolve are things that ultimately will not go away because we're wired differently.
Right.
And I think that was intentional, because I think there's a dynamic there. I call it an exploratory developmental dynamic that's never at rest. That is, it explores our humanness, it develops our humanness, and it's a dynamic that's never at rest. It's like a mathematical equation for a circle that doesn't close. It's like a spiral, like putting a wood screw down in. Our relationship, if it's working the way it's supposed to, the man laying down his life for his wife and the wife submitting to the husband, as Paul says, and those things happening together, that it's like a screw that just goes deeper and deeper and deeper into what it means to be human, what it means to be given. And, you know, we'll touch on this in another show. If you don't know what it means to be given, you can't know what it means to be forgiven.
Hmm.
Because given is the active term in both of those. You have to, if you can't be given, you can't be forgiven. So this is a process that in marriage, it's a process of, I call, shared being. So we can talk a bit about the shared being. The husband laying down his
life. Well, what
wife.
About shared being? Well, and I want to back it up just a little bit. Now, mm-hmm. we talked before we went on the air, too. What about people who never get married? Mm-hmm. People, single people.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're saying marriage is the ultimate way to become human. Mm-hmm. But what about people who are single?
Yeah. And I have a sister who's a missionary in Africa and has been for about 30 years. And she's a single person and loves the Lord and has a dynamic ministry there and is a dynamic person. I believe that the marriage relationship is foundational. It's fundamental to our being human. Now, everyone doesn't get married, but we all have parents.
There you go. Yeah.
And if our parents had understood this relationship, and if they had been involved in this in the way that we're talking about, shared being, the husband laying his life down, laying himself aside for his wife, and the wife submitting to the husband, which rarely happens in any kind of balance in a family. But if that were happening, a person would choose to either marry or not marry, and it would always be a healthy choice. And I think that because that hasn't been there, we have what we call the gay community, which is something that's birthed out of broken relationships and dysfunctional relationships, and then it perpetrates that. So it can't get us to that place of humanness where we comprehend the salvation of God. So anyway, as a side, that would be one of my objections to gay marriage. It can maybe perform all of the objectives that
the state wants in a secular way,
mm-hmm. but it certainly can't get us to that rendezvous point because it doesn't get down into what it means to be human in the way that this relationship that God engineered does.
Well, this process of surrender and shared being that never ends, mm-hmm. why don't you expand on this a little bit?
The man and woman, we're never really on the same page. At least that's what I'm learning in my marriage. As much as I try.
Never on the same page. 70 years of marriage.
Well, and let me explain. I guess I should back up and say we can agree on where to have our vacation right. and what to have for dinner right. and this and that. Right. But, I can sit down with the way I think. And I can start to express something to my wife, and she'll say, yeah, I understand. But there's never a total understanding. When she says, I understand that she kind of understands,
right.
you know? And the same is conversely true. Mm-hmm. When I say, I understand, I can see in her eyes that she's coming halfway, you know, or three quarters of the way. That's kind of good enough. We will never get to the place where we think alike. There will never be a point where she reads my mind and behaves accordingly in the same way I would. No, there's always every day, in so many ways, there's always an opportunity, always a challenge for me to lay my life down, for her to lay her life down. And if done correctly, it takes us deeper into what it means to be human. I was looking at our marriage pictures and early family pictures the other day and just realizing how ignorant and egotistical, self-centered I was in those early days. And the fact that, I probably am now. She says, you've changed a lot. You're so much better. So I'm glad of that. But just looking back at that and seeing that if I had known then what I know now, if I had put that into place back then, I just think a lot of people would have been a lot more healthy,
And you started this whole conversation today with, what was it, a marriage is really about dying, or what mm-hmm. would you say? How did you put that?
Well, a death experience. I don't mean that to be unhappy, but it is. Yeah. But it is really, to really understand, Christ's marriage with the church was a death experience, and Adam's relationship with Eve, that started with the death experience. And unless we're willing to have that, lay our lives aside and have that, death to myself.
Mm.
We don't really see the joy, all of the joy in marriage, but laying myself aside opens up a whole nother way of experience that other person.
The purpose and process of marriage, as always, a very interesting take on this subject with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Always interesting. Again, these always feel like such a set, like my own little session, but I hope people who are listening this today on Sound Mind are kind of keying into what you're talking about here. And you've explained this even further in an article. What's that website again?
ChristianCounselorsForum.com, and it's the current article there. So.
And if people want to come to you for some marriage counseling and trying to get through mm-hmm. to that, maybe you say more that guy who needs to be reminded that he needs to die to self a little bit more, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, 425-778-6169.
And you have offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And your main website is
BibleBasedCounselor.com.
BibleBasedCounselor.com. Always refreshing. Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.